Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. William Monroe Trotter was the co-founder and editor of the Boston-based black weekly newspaper, The Guardian. The Guardian was a powerful force in black journalism at the time. Through vocal advocacy for anti-lynching laws and enforcement of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, Trotter built a reputation as an uncompromising fighter working to prevent the rollback of Reconstruction. He was also rival to another significant black leader of the time, Booker T. Washington. Carrie Greenidge teaches history at Tufts University, where she's the director of the school's program in American Studies. She's also author of Black Radical, The Life and Times of William Monroe Trotter. It's the first major biography of Trotter since 1970. Carrie was in the studio with me last week, and I wanted to know why it was important to retell Trotter's story now.
So the last biography was written in the 1970s by a wonderful author named Stephen Fox, and he was coming from the turmoil of the 1960s. He was limited by the historical records that he had at the time. And since 1970, the field of African-American history in particular and American history generally has evolved, as we all know, and the access we now have to certain records that were not available in the 1960s are available for this book. The other thing I think is that Trotter's life really illustrates life at a time when there was a promise of the end of the Civil War and the promise of radical Reconstruction, and then that promise was betrayed with the fall of Reconstruction and the rise of the late 19th century, early 20th century shift. And so I think his life is relevant to our time because many people feel sort of we're in the same moment of sort of all this promise happening 60s, 70s, into the 80s, and then there's this moment where people feel as though the political times are in flux. So he definitely is a figure that is relevant for our times.
So let's talk about The Guardian a little bit. He did found it, I think, in 1901 with one of Boston's first black librarians, George Forbes.
Yes.
It was at kind of the vanguard of an explosion of black journalism and black press. Is that correct? And that's sort of what I took from the book. And how would you situate the role of The Guardian in that landscape?
So The Guardian is founded, as you're absolutely correct, in 1901. It's founded at a time when there's an explosion of black newspapers across the country. So The Guardian emerges amongst other known high-circulating newspapers. His paper was different in that he did not accept support from sponsors. And so what would typically happen, and this was true for the black press as well as the white press, was that political actors would support a newspaper and support that newspaper as a way to help get their political message across. Of course, this is before TV or anything like that. And so Trotter was big on saying that The Guardian was not going to be bought, that he would fund it himself.
He was pure in that way, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. That he wouldn't accept advertisements from skin bleaching, hair straightening companies. And so his paper really became this institution that emerged at a time when many other newspapers to survive were doing that. And he was fortunate enough to have his own fortune that went into the newspaper to support it without having to be dictated by political whim.
And it went into the newspaper by the end of his life. He had used his fortune up in publishing The Guardian.
Exactly. So he enters 1900, a fresh Harvard University graduate, first Phi Beta Kappa graduate of Harvard. And by the time he died in 1934, his fortune was completely depleted. He basically went from being a real estate investor as a profession in the late 1890s to giving up that business to devote his time to The Guardian. And The Guardian having not being a moneymaker. It was never something that was going to make him wealthy. But really, the newspaper and his passion for civil rights is what drove him to keep the paper going.
So the book, the first half of the title is Black Radical.
Yes.
It is not hard to figure out once you start reading the book why that's the mm-hmm. title of your book. As a reader, I felt like what you were telling us was he was uncompromising.
Yes.
It's part of the reason he got buried in history, because he made everybody mad
yes.
with his lack of compromising. His relationship or lack thereof with Booker T. Washington was breathtaking.
Yes.
As a reader, I mean, he calls him the great traitor, mm-hmm. the Benedict Arnold of the Negro race.
Yes.
So tell us about that relationship.
So Trotter's main criticism of Booker T. Washington was that, in the words of Du Bois, Washington was a leader of two races, not one. That Washington was called in this very particular position of having to, number one, solicit funding for Tuskegee Institute from white donors, very wealthy white donors. Number two, create an organization and a educational institution in the South at a time when there's lynching, racial violence, and backlash against emancipation. And three, Washington did that at a time when he's having his own family. He's currying favor with white donors, often whom were not very into black civil rights in terms of desegregation. And so Trotter's issue with Washington was that he felt that Washington compromised the race for his own personal gain. And he was somebody also who realized and pointed out the damaging way that Washington's rhetoric propagated and participated in the deterioration of rights since the end of Reconstruction. And so Trotter's criticism was that Washington was not fit to be seen as a leader of African Americans, and that he had basically, he calls him an imported boss, that he was basically somebody who was seen as a leader by white Americans, and that black Americans were suffering underneath some of the policies.
Underserved
by that. And so that was his main criticism with Washington.
All right, so in the little bit we're going to ask you to read, Booker T. Washington is speaking in Boston at the AME Zion Church.
Yes.
Trotter invites himself, to that event, forces his way in. It's a meeting of the National Negro Business League.
Yes.
And he wants to ask questions he was prevented from asking at other venues around the country,
yes,
where Washington has been as well. Is
yes.
that right?
Yes.
All right. So why don't you read for us a little bit?
Trotter shouted, "Put me out, arrest me." And Lewis ordered police to remove Martin from the church. When one Black League member condescendingly huffed, "Throw Trotter out the window," the crowd surged once again, this time booing even louder as a policeman approached Trotter and told him to quiet down. And so it was that the Harvard-educated real estate broker son of a Union Army veteran and federal appointee became a populist icon amongst Black Boston working people. The more the police tried to control the situation, the more applause Trotter received.
So this page really stood out for me as a reader as kind of a microcosm of the book, mm-hmm. in that it feels like you are advancing Trotter as somebody who's uncompromising, absolutely disruptive approach was necessary during a time of great compromise, lack of enforcement, and a narrative among white America, sometimes in collaboration with parts of black America.
Yes.
That wanted to say that the life of black Americans was acceptable when it wasn't.
Yes, exactly. That's a very accurate reading. And he was somebody who wanted to disrupt the narrative that African American people particularly had about themselves, which they'd been fed, which is that voting had failed, that African American people had made little progress in slavery, that if they were to make progress, really what they had to do was, you know, buckle down and work, and, you know, eventually white America will accept you. And Trotter's argument was that this was not the case. We have to see ourselves as political actors. We have to see ourselves as having the right to vote, even if we can't vote in the South because we are disenfranchised. We can vote in the North. And when we vote, use that for our own ends and not for any political party that wants to manipulate our vote. And so he was definitely a disruptor, is a great word. He was somebody who was constantly putting himself in places where the bureaucracy of activism at the time, he probably was not invited to be, and then would insert himself. And through that, really insert average people who had little connection to these arguments that are happening between organizations, get them to feel that the argument and the struggle was their own.
So I was watching the most recent Democratic debate, and one of the subjects that came up was sort of enfranchisement into the Democratic Party of black voters.
Yes.
That really struck me in the context of having just read Black
yes.
Radical,
mm-hmm.
because one of the things that Trotter does is call both parties to task and
yes.
say, it seems he argued, black Americans should not ally themselves with a party, but only with platforms that serve the needs of black Americans regardless of the party.
Yes. So he was very much saying that African American voters needed to ally themselves to the party that best met their interests as working people, as people who were denied the franchise, as people who were struggling underneath Southern and national repressive laws. And so his argument was that neither party, as they existed during his lifetime, was good at preserving the rights of African Americans, but that when black people voted, they had to vote in their best interest.
So there are a couple other things that I want to get to before we finish. One, I felt like at some level for me as a reader, you were rewriting my understanding of black history in Boston.
Yes.
Do people not fully understand the role of black history in Boston and Boston's black community in larger American history?
Absolutely. I remember when I started working on the book and I would tell other historians what I was doing, a lot of them reacted with the rhetoric that we know about Boston. You know, Boston was a place where there was abolition before the Civil War. And then we kind of learn a little bit that Martin Luther King Jr. went to school here. And then we learn about busing. And then there's not really a lot of other
three data points.
Exactly. Exactly. And really, the black community in Boston is one of the oldest African-American, African-descended communities in the Americas. And despite the small numbers compared to cities like New York or cities like Philadelphia, the black community has always had an impact on the region's politics and has always had an impact on the way the region reacts and enacts racial policy and racial thought. And so I really want to examine what does black civil rights look like in a city like Boston, where many people don't consider that that history is long and is as significant as it is. And I really, Trotter is somebody who was as much a part of the city of Boston as Boston was a part of him. And it's not to say that he's exceptional or city is exceptional. It's to say what happens when we look at African-American history through the lens of a city or a region or a space that we don't traditionally think of looking at it.
Both Zoe, our producer, and I, when we were reflecting on the book, also reflected on what appears to be a man who was very much made possible by the women in his life.
Oh, yes.
But who did not give credit to those women, or including his wife, Deanie, or acknowledge the role that they played in making The Guardian possible, both practically and sort of politically.
Yes.
So how do we understand and reconcile that piece of him?
So I always preface this by saying that Trotter was a misogynist. There's no getting around it.
There you go.
He was somebody who grew up with his sisters actually being the favorite of his father, I argue in the book, and him being seen as you have to toughen up and be a man. And the consequence of that, in my estimation, is that he became somebody who was treated as the golden child, goes to Harvard and graduates and makes his parents proud, but also in that is seen as he does that alone, and that was definitely the narrative he was given his whole life. And so even though we know his mother is, you know, invests her husband when he dies, invests the family property in all of these properties and her three adult children and then her son's, you know, political escapades, both of his sisters basically for a time put their lives on hold to support The Guardian. His wife doesn't have any children and then puts her life on hold to support The Guardian. And it's through the women that he, as you're saying, that he's eventually allowed to pursue the career that he does pursue. He, throughout his life, had not a reckoning, but he began to, particularly after his wife passed away in 1918, had a different approach to black women in his life who continued to run the newspaper. And so he began to, he had a local black woman run the newspaper when he went to France, and she basically upped the numbers of subscriptions. And so it's really this, it's a relationship, I think, of a lesson of how a misogynistic sort of man who's a leader, brilliant politically, the relationships and the compromises that misogyny can make with the women in his life.
All right. So the last question, and this isn't a spoiler for readers because the beginning of the book starts at the end.
Yes.
So it's Trotter is 66 years old and he dies by suicide after jumping from the roof of a boarding house where he lives in Roxbury.
Yes.
It set up a question for me that I returned to as a reader all the way throughout the book.
Yes.
Which was, at the end of the day, did he succeed or didn't he?
He succeeded in the sense that telling and inspiring African American community to decide for themselves what their politics is going to be, he succeeded in that. He succeeded in radicalizing a whole generation of African-American people. A. Philip Randolph is one. Cyril Briggs is another. Pan-Africanists in Boston are another. Galvanizing those people to see the possibilities of black radicalism in a way they hadn't before. So he did succeed. He, in terms of his life and the end of his life, he was a man in 1934 who was looking out at a country that was in the midst of the Great Depression. He was told that the Guardian was going to not survive, and that was his life work. He was told existed in a city that at the time, you know, one third of all Bostonians were out of work with no sense of relief in sight. And so he dies at a moment in his life where, if we look back, you know, many people were feeling this way in 1934, that, you know, the world was cutting to this cataclysmic end. So his contributions, I would say, in the consciousness, the way that he had African-American people and influenced them to think about themselves and their own possibilities.
And did The Guardian survive?
The Guardian continued to publish. His sister continued to publish it until her death in the 1950s. The Guardian itself faded, but the Bay State Banner, actually, in Boston, is kind of the child of the spirit of The Guardian, and that began in the 1960s.
That's Carrie Greenidge. She teaches history at Tufts University, and her new book is Black Radical, The Life and Times of William Monroe Trotter. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, wild turkeys, neighborhood nuisance or conservation miracle. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.